Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Texans and Raiders, only teams without a win yet this season. Eckler wide open, inside the five. Touchdown, Chargers.
Be competitive. Lose 12 game.
They need the 35, fourth and five. Wilson, and dropped by Boone. And it would have been for a first down and into Raider territory.
That all but seals it. The win for the Raiders.
And you can get better quicker without having to giving all of that up to get the guy and get the position that you truly need.
Brissett fires, and it's intercepted! Picked off by D. Alford!
And that's going to do it, as Cleveland cannot stop the clock.
Oh, I don't know why everybody in this city is so upset. Yeah, I know the NFL team in this city, the Houston Texans, are the only winless team in the entire NFL. I understand that you want winning football, but Sunday could not have gone better for this city. You got to think big picture. The Houston Texans, only winless team. The road to number one is right there in front of you. The Raiders pick up their first win against a bad Bronco team. And then the Cleveland Browns do the unthinkable. They lose to Marcus Mariota and the Atlanta Falcons in a game where Marcus Mariota was 7-for-19 throwing the football. I don't know why everybody's so sad. A miracle happened in Atlanta. The Raiders took care of business, got their first win, and the Houston Texans are embracing the suck.
Let me explain why, Jeremy, because it's the same reason why we got more pushback than I think we could have expected. From Embrace the Suck, from the time that we introduced it to just recently when we put it out there in the poll on social media, you get a certain portion of the population in this city that are football fans that got drunk on blue Kool-Aid that just can't accept the fact that it's a good thing when it's a really good thing, because it's not going to happen for 10 to 15 years. You're not going to be the Bears or the Browns searching for like 23 quarterbacks. But you have to endure short-term misery to get long-term success. And this is the formula that we've laid out for you, and it played out to a T yesterday, yet some people still can't and won't and refuse to accept it.
Yeah, this was I saw everybody mad on Twitter. Oh, Lovie Smith. Because Lovie Smith, all of a sudden, that seat's getting a little hot for Lovie Smith. Pep Hamilton, play calling again, has not been very good, which if you listen to the Killer Bees, we were telling you before the season, don't think Pep Hamilton, Sean McVay. He literally got fired midseason in a year as an offensive coordinator for an NFL team. Everybody's still making excuses for Davis Mills. You have either people that are ready to move on from Davis Mills, which those numbers are growing by the day, or you have all those people hanging on to Davis Mills where it's always somebody else's fault. You know, Pep Hamilton's the fault that Davis Mills is bad. Brandon Cooks isn't playing like a wide receiver one. That's why Davis Mills is bad. The offensive line's terrible. That's why Davis Mills is bad. The defense is allowing a bunch of rushing yards. Why is that involved with Davis Mills? Who knows? But Davis Mills truthers think that that's a reason that Davis Mills is bad. Good quarterbacks in the NFL are those that always have their team in the game. Yep. That you're scared. You're capable of winning any game that you play, regardless of your record, regardless of your team.
I was thinking about it all game yesterday. Look across the field. Just look across the field for the entire game. That's a good quarterback. That's a good young quarterback that knows exactly how to play the position at a very young age, going to be around for a very long time. And I kept thinking to myself, that is exactly who you want to have as your quarterback, too. You want a guy like that. That's why you can't be okay with top 15, because there's a guy like that that's going to be around for a long time playing for them in your conference, and he's really, really good, and your guy is really, really not.
What a perfect Sunday, man. I just can't. I'm sitting there late last night while enjoying the Chiefs-Buccaneers game, a couple of really good quarterbacks in that game, and I'm like, wow, how did the Browns lose this game in which Marcus Mariota completes seven passes? I'm not rooting for the Texans to lose, but whenever you fall behind as big as they did early on in that game, it's like, okay, well, they're probably going to lose. I actually liked the fight a little bit of the team. Like, moral victory back, Monday, yeah. Way to go, made it a game there in the fourth quarter. They're playing hard for Lovie Smith. And then, of course, seeing the Raiders do their thing and knock it off the Broncos, and I just had that tweet ready to go. Houston Texans, the only winless team left in the entire NFL. I know that they have the tie, but the win column is zero so far for the Houston Texans. It's a perfect day for Embrace the Sun.
Really
Everybody
is.
Should be happy in the city of Houston. You know what we should do, too? We should be embracing more people to embrace the suck. We should have people join the movement, Blankers, because a lot of folks don't like this talk. And look, I saw Lamont tweet at us that we're in this city saying that, you shouldn't pay attention to the Texans. He didn't say that, but he said that whenever the Texans are winning, it's good for sports radio. I don't deny that. But and he said that we don't care about the Texans. Maybe I'm paraphrasing or making things up. That's not even the case. Like, we're doing this in the best interest of the Texans.
Right.
We want the Texans to be good. We want the Texans to get as competitive as they can as quickly as they possibly can, which is the whole mantra of Embrace the Suck.
I would argue that it's good either way.
Sure.
If for radio, in sports radio. But I don't think that there's a negative either way. People want to talk about their team. Uh-huh. Really good or really bad.
There's a lot of cities in the country that if they're losing, if your NFL team's losing games, the ratings skyrocket. I heard some people talking about Texas A&M, the College Station numbers and ratings, and with the videos and the Nunos who does the Texas. Their numbers skyrocket whenever they lose. If you go look at the Northeast, sports radio numbers whenever the Giants, the Jets, the Eagles, when those teams are bad, they skyrocket because people are mad, they're passionate, they care, they're angry, all of that. I think in Houston, we see more apathy. I think people actually turn it off more than they don't even want to be mad. They just, instead of caring and being angry and being passionate, it's like, oh, here we go. We're going to have another year of this. Let's turn this off until next season. Look, if you sit through the Texans games and you don't have the mindset of we need to win a football game, because what's the point, right? I mean, you're 0-3-1 now. I don't we're having a conversation at some point that are the Texans going to win a football game this year? Who is the best chance for the Houston Texans to beat when you look at their schedule? It's not a conversation of can they get to 7 wins. This isn't a conversation of can they somehow compete in a bad division. This is how in the world are they going to get to their Vegas total of 4.5, right? Mm-hmm. So the wins at this point are somewhat irrelevant when you look at the Houston Texans. So if you have that mindset on Sundays for the three and a half hours you're watching the Texans, it allows you to evaluate Davis Mills, and who I thought played a better game than he has. It was better than last week, but it's better than his overall cumulative 2022.
But to me, when I was looking at it, and again, when you were doing it last night, I was doing it this morning when walking the dogs, when I normally kind of start thinking about the bigger picture as it relates to the show. And I was thinking, hey, look, he did again what he pretty much is. He's a 240 to 250 yards, couple picks, couple of touchdown type guy. The thing is so many people are worked up about Davis Mills doesn't get enough credit to be part of that draft class a year ago, and he's better than so-and-so that was drafted ahead of him. Who cares? Is he better than Mahomes and Allen and Herbert? And if he's not, then what you have to do is stop worrying about him getting enough credit for where they drafted him and stop worrying about all these things and being either okay that he's going to give you so-so, ho-hum, middle of the road, 240, 250, 2-2s every week at the high point, or understand why when we said embrace the suck, it involved he's going to play all 17 games this year, but then you're going to take a quarterback next season for starting next year, and it's the right move to make. It also just blows my mind the same way people can't just embrace the suck, that they can't embrace the notion that Davis Mills will play all season, but he's not the guy. He could be on the roster. He could be a quarterback in this league to somewhere. But in this town, with what they're looking for where they want this team to go, I just have never from day one thought he was the guy.
Yeah, I mean, you at times have been higher on Davis Mills than
True.
I have, so you're preaching to the choir here.
Right.
I never envisioned that happening. And OG on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, how stupid to want the quarterback to suck before the season even starts. If you're a real fan of this team, you are hoping for Mills to be the one. Do you realize how good that would have been for the Texans going forward? See, that's putting words in our mouth, right, though. Like, embracing the suck isn't cheering against the Houston Texans to be
nothing
poor.
To do with that.
It's to have a state of mind of realism, to be realistic with where the Texans are at. Look, we didn't think that Davis Mills going into the start of the year was going to be a top 10 quarterback that's going to take over this franchise, and that every single game that he plays in has a chance and is capable of winning that game, where he's keeping you in every single game, capable of winning every single game, and every single year that he's the quarterback that you're a playoff contender.
What did I say? He matriculates the ball down the field. He gets points for you. He shows that he can quarterback an NFL team to getting points, but they just don't win the games at the end of the day. That would be the ideal scenario.
Well, I mean, ideal scenario is he's a top 10 quarterback and you believe in him. Like, it's not realistic,
well,
but
you're
that's
on
ideal.
Your way to the ideal scenario. But at least when you want to see progress from Davis Mills, it was from the first half, the first appearance to the second half last year, he made progress. You want to see continuation of progress? Have a guy that controls the huddle, that makes the right reads, that gets points on the board, puts the team on long, sustained scoring drives. Whether they win or lose is irrelevant.
See, Battery Chuck, of course, embracing the suck is hoping that they lose. See, Battery Chuck and OG are just so anti-embrace the suck because they have the red Kool-Aid and they're Texans homers, and they somehow thought the Texans were going to be above 500 and compete in an AFC South. Like, embracing the suck isn't about hoping that they lose. It's having a rational state of mind that they are going to lose because they have the worst roster in the NFL, which I think is not up for debate. If you look across the NFL, we already mentioned that the Houston Texans are the only team in the entire NFL with a big giant goose egg in the win column. They're 0-3-1. Every single NFL team that has played four games, every single NFL team, they have all played four games, and every single one of them has a win with the exception of the Houston Texans. This isn't about rooting for it. It's about understanding where the Texans are in their current state of life. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If you want to get on this, we're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. Also, look, this goes right in line with this conversation as well. Are you okay? Are you willing to go winless this season as a member of the Houston Texans or as a fan? Of the Houston Texans. Would you be willing to go winless rooting for this Houston Texans team? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Something that's not winless, something that is fantastic, is Fidelity Fuels. They're a wholesale supplier and distributor of petroleum products. Listen, if you're a construction manager, if you're a trucking company, oil field professional, industrial worker, farmer, or any type of fleet fueling, Fidelity Fuels wants to partner with you, and I promise that you want to partner with them as well. Emergency response. We saw this the other day in Florida. Hope everything is okay down there. Hurricanes. We see floods. We see freezes in Houston as well. So you probably have a generator, but you might not have your fuel lined up. Well, Fidelity Fuels can make sure that you're prepared for that. How can they help trucking companies? Well, efficiency. Keep your drivers out of the truck stops. Have more control of your fuel spending. I'm sure you're tired of paying retail prices for your DEF. So let Fidelity drop a tote right in your yard, saving you time and, most importantly, money. Do you need solvent for crude or asphalt cleanup, from tools to terminal storage tanks? Fidelity offers a variety of solvents to meet your exact need. Fidelity Fuels can help on the construction site as well. Mobile tank for on-site fuel storage, delivery to help fill those dirt movers, or whatever else that you need fueled. Fidelity Fuels works around the clock, 24/7, 365, WBE, SBE, DBE, and Hub certified. So if you're looking for a partner for municipal contractor to fulfill your company's diversity goals, Fidelity can help. Reliable deliveries and competitive pricing. That's Fidelity Fuels. Call now, 877-938-FUEL, 877-938-3835, or check them out online at fidelityfuels.com.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We want to welcome you to the movement. It's the Killer Bees, and we've been on this movement since when we began the show last August. Blanker started it. I very much advocate for us. I think you were even convincing Brendan, because Brendan's been the only Killer Bee that has had any sort of pushback on Embrace the Suck. He's like, no, you're going to win some games. Some games are won. That's good. I think even Brendan's coming around on Embrace the Suck.
I think this whole time I've been somewhere in between the middle of you guys. Like, I do think a high pick is important. I just think it's not the only thing that's important.
Okay. All right.
I do think, like, going winless is a bad thing.
Okay. All right. We'll ask that question in a moment. But we want all of the Hive, all of the listeners, we want you to join in the movement of the Killer Bees. We want you to be embracing the suck right there with us for a lot of different reasons. Look, if Davis Mills proves us wrong over the next, let's see, what is it, 13 games, and he looks like he's capable of being a game-winning quarterback, hey, we'll eat crow and root for Davis Mills next year. But if not, it's a good way, it's a good state of the mind to watch the games. You root for Derek Stingley, you root for all the young players, you root for them to continue to progress and develop. And then it also helps out watching college football on Saturdays because you start to watch these quarterbacks a little bit and like, ooh, I like what I could see in a Will Levis in a Texans uniform, a Bryce Young, even though he injured his shoulder, in a Texans uniform. Some like C.J. Stroud, not necessarily me, but hey, C.J. Stroud in a Texans uniform. So join us and embrace the suck. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Lamont, are you willing to embrace the suck with the Killer Bees?
All right, man. Hear me out. I understand the logic of where you guys are coming from with the embrace the suck, and I listen to you guys every single day. I like both of you guys, but here's what I'm saying with the whole and I was down with it. I was down with the embrace the suck. I am down with the embrace the suck, but I didn't came to I didn't have to come to Jesus moment right now.
Easterby called you.
In other words, if we embrace the suck, we are trusting Casario, Pep Hamilton, and Lovey Smith, two guys he promoted from a crap team. In other words, with embrace the suck, you pretty much putting all of your eggs in a basket that Casario is going to do the right thing. This is the dude that went out there and hired David Culley, was about to hire Josh McCown, elevated two crap coaches that's playing football from the 1980s and also drafted Davis Mills. So, only thing I'm trying to say, fellas, I'm bringing it down. If the embrace the suck, if we had a real GM, if we had something real out there that I knew that it was going to be something good, I'd be 100% locked in. But we just gambling now, man. We just throwing the dice right now. That's all I have, fellas.
All right,
good
Lamont,
call, Lamont.
I liked your fire. I need you to take a deep breath because I think that I'm only going to say one of the three that you mentioned is important, and it's the one that you're actually scrutinizing, but I'm going to give you the hope that I see. It's easy to scrutinize the hiring process that Casario has used and the hires that he's made, but where he has succeeded so far is the draft, and he really succeeded this last season. You know, he did some things, whether you think they're really good or not, including getting Mills with a third-round pick, Nico Collins, and the first draft he had when he didn't have a full complement of draft picks. But this last season, he showed you exactly why embrace the suck works even more, and that is he can evaluate talent, and the guys that he took have instantaneously become guys that you can build around, that you can see can play, that have started almost from day one. And you're looking at, you haven't even seen Mechie or Christian Harris yet, and you know that through four rounds and more, you got football players. If he does that again and you got extra picks out of the trade that he was able to orchestrate, even with a no trade for Deshaun Watson to get all the draft capital he got there too, that if nothing else, where Nick Casario has got a huge passing grade has been the draft, analyzing talent, and of all the sixth and seventh round pick trades that he made that were worthless, the trade that was the biggest for this franchise is the one that he got right, which is Watson.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more torn on Casario. We talked about this last season. There's a lot of the trades that he's made that are questionable. Lamont brings up great points. Look, David Culley is a head coach in the NFL. He goes down as one of the worst head coaches in NFL history. Nick Casario is the general manager. I know that there's some murmurs of like, well, he didn't have a whole lot to like involved in that decision. I don't know what's true. I don't know what's not. All I know is that Nick Casario is the general manager, and he's talking about it to the press saying that he was involved in the process and the one making the call. So if he's the one telling everybody he's making the call, I have to give him responsibility for making the call on David Culley. It's the same thing with Lovie Smith. Look, a lot of things happened leading up to the hiring of Lovie Smith that turned Lovie Smith into being the head coach coach of the Houston Texans when it wasn't going to happen. Some of those things were external. They weren't even internal. Brian Flores lawsuit. But at the end of the day, it's Nick Caserio standing on the table saying, look, we brought him in. These are the reasons we brought him in. And Lamont is right. Lovie Smith hasn't been a good head coach in a, what, very long time. You got to go back to the Tampa days. Everybody was quick to dismiss what happened at Illinois because it was the college game. He was still really bad at Illinois. His defense last year was one of the worst defenses in the NFL. His defense this year is one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Pep Hamilton, once upon a time, was fired as an offensive coordinator. That doesn't disqualify him for being an offensive coordinator again, but you look at what he's produced in the first four games, you have that in the back of your mind. I'm not sure Pep Hamilton was an upgrade even over Tim Kelly. So there's a lot of things that Caserio has done that are negative. There are some things that Caserio has done that is positive. I wasn't ready for Nick Caserio catching some strays, and maybe they're not strays. It's his team, and they're 0-3-1. So, like, I'm still a little bit on the fence of Nick Caserio. I probably err on more of the side of I think Nick Caserio is going to get it back on track than I err on the side that he's not. And it's because of the players that he has brought in. If you go look at the draft classes that he's had, the Davis Mills draft class is hard to grade him because he didn't have a first or a second. We're criticizing Davis Mills, but if you have a third-round quarterback that is starting games, and it is probably deserving of starting games, we don't think he's a franchise quarterback, but we think he's top 30, top 35, then that's not a miss. If you draft the top 35 quarterback with a third-rounder, that's a success. Look, Nico Collins, he's kind of hasn't shown a whole lot. He had a decent game yesterday. That's a decent prospect for somebody who is in the middle of the draft. This year's draft class, look, I'll probably forever have a close eye on the wide receivers in this draft pool after they took Derek Stingley number 3. I don't love the idea of taking a cornerback at number 3 when you need playmakers in the NFL. So that's something that I will always have my eye, although I do think Derek Stingley Jr. is a good player. Jalen Petrie, 4 games into the year, they're talking about him as the defensive rookie of the year. That looks like a hit. Kenyon Green had a lousy game yesterday. I'm still bullish on his pro prospects. I think he's going to be very good. And then you mentioned some of the others. We haven't seen John Metchie. We won't till next year. We haven't seen Christian Harris. He's eligible to return from the IR this week. Will he? I don't know. The Texans have a bye week in week 6. It might be wise to give him 2 more weeks off before returning to the football field. Nick Caserio, though, from a player personnel, like bringing players in, Jerry Hughes, we've seen him be a solid piece to this team. Stevie Nelson's another one. I like what Nick Caserio has done with the 53 to this point. I'm not going to give him the credit that you do for Deshaun Watson because I think an idiot like me could have traded Deshaun Watson for 3 first-rounders. So I'm not going to give Caserio that credit, but I do like what I've seen from Caserio bringing players in. The coaching staff, Lamont's got a point. That's questionable at best.
No doubt. But look, the hiring, and like I said, and the empowering Easterby early, which you can deny it all you want, but a lot of them had his name written all over the guys that were being considered and or brought in. And McCown is the one that everybody's going to kind of promote the most. But I think Culley was a big Easterby guy. Easterby liked Culley. And you're right. And Caserio put his name on the stamp. But I think talent evaluation is the biggest part of this. Where I am, I am more and more becoming a believer in Caserio. I'm not a believer in some of his hiring practices. And I really think that Lovey was just kind of a fluky thing that was kind of fell in their lap because they were in a panic mode because of all the outside things that were going on around them. And they happened to have a guy that fit everything that they needed in a short-term fix right there on their own staff. But I think that when you look at what he's done with talent evaluation, and I am a huge, huge proponent of the fact that Caserio wins the Watson trade, not just because you're right. Anybody hopefully could have gotten at least 3 first-round picks. But because with a no-trade clause, the way he manipulated the system when he shouldn't have had any say-so with any team that Deshaun was going to pick, but to have meetings already and discussions to predetermine with each team that was in the running, if they were selected, what the return was going to be for Deshaun, was crazy good to me that I don't think most general managers would have been savvy enough to pull off. So does he have shortcomings? Absolutely. But where I really think his strengths are is where this team needs him most, which is in talent evaluation, player selection, and the building of the roster while sticking to the plan.
That's where I'm at with him. And I'm even willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on Culley just because of where the state of the roster was. Like, if you're going to go out and strike for the head coach that you want to be your head coach for like 10 years. If you're a GM, you're looking at, I want to be here for 10 years and build a sustained winner. Like, David Culley wasn't the sustained head coach. They didn't hire David Culley to be here for the duration of Nick Caserio's tenure as the Texans GM.
If you had a Rams-type roster, Sean, and right. then you go and get a guy like Sean McVay.
Yeah.
When you knew you had the roster you had and you were the had the dire straits thanks to Bill O'Brien, you weren't trying to hire Sean McVay at that point. You were trying to hire a bridge guy to just take the lumps with you to set you up for the future.
That said, he did hire David Culley.
He did.
David Culley was atrocious. So, like, even if you're looking to hire somebody like that, that's like a bridge, somebody that's like got a positive mindset that's going to be very happy all the time. Like, even if you're looking for that genre of a head coach, you got like the worst of the genre. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll get into that conversation of would you be willing to go winless a little bit later. But we got a straight trash homie presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals. We do it each Monday, 12:30. We're cleaning up all of the Texans mess. And boy, was there a decent amount of Texans mess yesterday at NRG Stadium. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. But I want to tell you about ProDunk Hoops. Nothing messy about ProDunk Hoops. They're the best basketball goal on the market, simply stated. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel. They also got the competition-grade breakaway rim, perfect for dunking, hanging, keeping you safe. You know all about the adjustable goals. If you want to work on that shot, raise it up to regulation, you can. Put it up at 10 feet, or you can lower it down and throw down some jams, because that's always fun as well. It's basketball season. Rockets played their first preseason game yesterday, by the way. So now's the time of year to do this, especially with the weather feeling great right now in our city. Durability and strength of ProDunk Hoops, stainless steel fasteners, thicker steel, and their exclusive rust armor, which makes them sturdy and strong. And the best feature, they install the goal. Yes. The pros at ProDunk Hoops will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a darn thing. Let the pros do all of the work for you. ProDunk Hoops goals come in a variety of sizes and options. They'll be the perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Give them a call right now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
Clean up on all five.
Now that this week's game is in the books, let's do some cleaning up.
I want you to clean it up.
I want to rest!
Clean it up.
It's straight trash, homie, with the Killer Bees. Brought to you by Bavia Dumpster Rentals.
Straight trash, homie. Decent amount of it yesterday at NRG Stadium, especially in the first half, especially early in that game. Texans might have said, well, they cleaned up a little bit of the trash in the second half. Maybe they were Bavia Dumpster Rentals over at NRG. What do you want to start with, Blankers? Because there's a lot to go around.
Well, let's not go for the obvious. I'm going to go for pass defense. I just think the pass defense was atrocious. Keenan Allen was out of the game. Mm-hmm. You know how good Justin Herbert is and was, even though he was a little dinged up. And yet, overall pass defense, which starts with trying to put pressure on the quarterback, which they couldn't do all day, and then more importantly goes to a secondary that we thought was decent and might have been one of the better position groups on the team. And they just got sliced and diced and just taken to the cleaners over and over again, and I think that was painful to watch.
I wish we'd have seen more man coverage with Stingley on Mike Williams. You didn't see a whole lot of it, but the moments that he did, Mike Williams won the matchup with Derek Stingley, and then he got banged up a little bit later in the game, tried to come back into the game, which, cool. I thought Lovey should have probably held him out once he got hurt, to be honest with you. Look, the four-man rush is interesting, because you talked about not being able to apply any pressure on Herbert. They got to him once. They sacked him once. This is Lovie Smith style, and some people were questioning whether Lovie Smith just doesn't have it anymore. Some people were questioning if the game has passed Lovie Smith by, and he's married to the idea of creating pressure with four. That look, if you can create pressure with four in the NFL, that is a huge leg up for the defense. That's how Tom Brady gets beat a lot. Whenever he was losing games during his dynasty run with the Patriots, the people were getting after him with four, and they're able to drop seven back into coverage. The Texans just don't have the front four that's capable of doing that. I like Malik Collins as a player. You're not going to get a whole lot of pressure up the middle. I like Roy Lopez as a niche player. Like, he's all right. He's not going to provide much pressure in hurries. We've seen Jerry Hughes do it sometimes, but he's in his 30s. We've seen Rasheem Green do it a little bit. The one that I'm massively disappointed with is John Grenard. John Grenard is playing a little bit more than half of the snaps defensively. We were talking about John Grenard as taking that next step up of being like a tier two pass rusher in the NFL, being a double-digit pass rusher or double digit sack guy in the NFL. He's not been playing at that level, and he's not even playing more, just slightly more than half the snaps for a guy that we thought was going to be a foundational piece and a part of the future for the Texans. He's playing 55% of the snaps.
Yeah, it's inexplicable. I don't know if there's something that we don't know, or if he's not, you know, conditioning wise. I don't know what the answer is, but that's not a guy that I thought was going to only be playing 50% of the snaps. Because you're right, we did discuss in detail how this is a guy that could actually take it to the next level and really be the next really kind of premier defensive pass rush type guy on the Texans. And it hasn't happened. And when he's not on the field for the majority of the plays, but you see four and five other guys on the field for almost every defensive snap, You're scratching your temple going, well, how does that happen? And why? More importantly, why is that happening?
John Gernard played 38 plays, 54% of the snaps. Rasheem Green played 37 plays, 53% of the snaps. Gernard's supposed to be your future on the edge. Maybe that's not the case. I'll piggyback off of yours to an extent.
Okay.
The linebacker play. This has been consistent. This has been each week of the season. A lot of those passing yards from the game yesterday, outside of what we saw from Mike Williams, it came from dudes that linebackers have responsibility for. Gerald Everett, the tight end, 6 targets, caught 5 of them, 61 yards and a tutty. Austin Eckler, we talked about this on Friday, that Austin Eckler was going to be a problem. On the ground, like 60 yards on 13 carries, whatever. He averaged 4.5 yards per carry, so that's decent. He also had 2 touchdowns running the football. He had one more through the air. He had almost 50 yards receiving out of the backfield. It's hard to watch these linebackers play, even with this embrace the suck mindset that I've had watching these games, because I just don't think that they're very good. Camus Grigier-Hill, what we've seen out of him is mediocre. Christian Kirksey, what we've seen out of him is mediocre. Kevin Pierre-Lewis is hurt, but what we've seen out of him is mediocre. And then Blake Cashman, for the few snaps he got concussed, had to leave the game. I can't wait to see Christian Harris on this field. Look, I don't think it's going to make the linebacker unit go from being the worst in the NFL to like 25th. They're still going to be overall pretty bad, but at least you have some talent.
You got one good player at least that you can base around, too.
And he's a rookie. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to have critical errors, but at least he's somebody who has talent. This linebacker core doesn't have any of it.
Well, I'll say my next one is, and again, I'll stay away from the obvious. Pass protection is a massive problem, okay? And as good as Kenyon Green is, at run blocking, and there were some times that I really thought he looked good again yesterday, opening up some holes. Overall, the strength of this offensive line, especially when you take a guy that's experienced like Titus Howard, you take a guy that at one point was the best left tackle or one of the best left tackles in the game, and still pretty damn good in Laremy Tunsil. They should be able to actually protect the quarterback. And I understand that Khalil Mack, as I talked about with you guys before the season, was set up with this system, with this defense, to have a breakout type kind of comeback year. But with Bosa out, you know where Khalil Mack is at all times. You could double team him. He shouldn't have had to deal with as much pressure being Davis Mills as he did yesterday. I mean, he was getting hit all the time. He got sacked, 4 times? He was getting constantly knocked on his keister, and that is not something that's supposed to happen with the guys that are on this offensive line.
The pass rush specifically, or the pass protection, not good. You mentioned the run blocking. The run, that's what's frustrating about this offensive line. It's because blocking the run, they did really well yesterday. Oh, they had one big gain for Damian Pierce. If you were to take that big gain out of it, Just take away the 75-yard touchdown for Damian Pierce. He still had over 50 yards on the ground with 13 carries. That's still more than 4 yards per carry, even if you eliminate his big play, which you can do. So the run blocking was fine. The problem was you just couldn't run a whole lot because you fell behind early, and all of a sudden the Chargers can sit back and say, we're going to go get the quarterback. And you're right. The pass protection was not very good. A couple of times Kenyon Green was exposed. And what's frustrating about that is I feel like the offensive line has been a strong point up until yesterday's
game.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah, you've got some veteran experience. You've got a guy coming out of A&M that was known for his run blocking, but that means normally that you're not going to be like below average as a pass blocker, but he looked below average as a pass blocker yesterday. He was a first-round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
That's not supposed to happen. And as a line, as a unit, we talked about how, hey, building some continuity amongst this offensive line with the individual talent that they now finally have on it should put them in a position to have a better than average offensive line that's only going to get better. Only now, it looks like after four games, it's actually gotten worse mm-hmm. than where it started, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah, took a step backwards yesterday. Rookies, other than Damian Pierce, I thought had a bad game yesterday as well. Derek Stingley Jr., whenever he was in man-to-man with Mike Williams, lost a majority of those matchups when Mike Williams was targeted. Jalen Petrie, a little overzealous and over-aggressive at times. There was times whenever he was kind of fooled. He had gap responsibility, that sort of stuff, and he would try to jump inside. All of a sudden, Austin Eckler was coming around the end, leading to some big gains. And then we mentioned Kenyon Green as well. So rookies other than Damian Pierce, I thought, probably had their worst game of the year. Bad time coming
back
home.
Which is, again, crazy that they take a step back after all the progress they've made early in the season, from becoming starters to the performances they put together week in, week out, regardless of what the results were for the team. The obvious one to me that I've been avoiding, that you can't avoid any longer, is Davis Mills is Davis Mills. And then we look at the General Mills scoreboard, it's now 0-4. 0 wins for the Mills Mafia, 4 in the category of over the Mills. And this is, again, as good as it's going to get, it looks like. So if you're happy with 2 picks and 2 touchdowns and a little bit more than 240 yards, but a guy doing the same things, and the biggest struggle for me is he keeps missing wide open receivers. And the third down play where he missed Collins, where there was no one near him, where there was no one near Collins, and he couldn't even put the ball in the same zip code, was the one that I was going, oh my God, this is what we've been talking about over and over. That is the poster right there for what we've been emphasizing that NFL quarterbacks should be able to do in their sleep. He couldn't do it with no one around him and no one around Collins. He did it over and over again. Open wide receivers, throwing it behind him, throwing it too high for them, throwing it where it didn't need to be, when it shouldn't be that hard to put it where at least somewhere in their hands area, they could bring it in and you could make progress in the passing game. And it's just to the point where I feel bad to a certain extent where we constantly are beating this drum, mm-hmm. but it's sitting there in your eyesight week in, week out, and it's unavoidable.
I thought he was a little bit better. I thought he was a little bit better than what we've seen as his average in 2022. But nowhere near the level where it's like, okay, this guy can go out and win us a football game, even with a bad roster. He put up some numbers when the team was behind.
The first half was atrocious.
The first half was really bad. Chargers were playing a lot of, like, keep everything in front of you type of defense, and Davis Mills was taking what the defense was giving him. He had a two-pass stretch where I thought he looked really good. He had a deep post-pass, actually, wasn't a post, just kind of an out route.
Collins, the first one?
And Nico Collins on a deep go route, I should say, where he just kind of threw him up. Yep.
And then he got Cooks after that.
Yeah, he went Nico Collins, deep go route down the left sideline, made a perfect throw, dropped it in the bucket. Really good throw by Davis Mills. And then the very next throw, he hammered it into Brandon Cooks from 25 yards on a deep post. So those two throws, I was like, okay, Davis Mills, that looks pretty good. That's what you need to do. But you have to do that on a sustained level. Like, Cooper Rush can do that. Case Keenum can do that. Jacoby Brissett can do that. But why are Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Pat Mahomes, why are those guys?
Justin Herbert.
They do it all the time. Justin Herbert does it all the time. And it's not to say they're never going to throw picks. A lot of people are going to point to that Davis Mills interception, the first interception. Well, he had pressure. He had somebody in his face. He still overthrew it with a dude in his face. And it also speaks to the pocket presence. Like, yeah, he had some pressure. Yes, he stepped into the pocket. But there was still some room to his right. Like, we always talk about Tom Brady, why is he great? Because his floor is so very, very high. And we say he doesn't have any athleticism, which he doesn't. But Tom Brady has elite pocket presence. Tom Brady's footwork is unbelievable. He can step into the pocket. He can slide to the right. He can slide to the left.
It's his intelligence, though, too.
It's intelligence, and it's what we talk about. To play the quarterback position, you have to have high IQ. You have to be very, very smart, football IQ. You also have to make great decisions, and Davis Mills does it. I thought Davis Mills could have easily slid to his right, drew some time to find somebody else to throw it to on that first pick. Didn't do it. One more quick one. When Lovie Smith threw in the towel on that final possession, because look, I mean, the Texans were down by 10. There was like 5 seconds on the clock. So there's like no reason to really run a play. But they handed off to Damian Pierce. Like, if you're going to throw in the towel, maybe don't get your best offensive weapon another lick late in the game.
No question. I thought the same thing. Like, the last thing you need to do is have Pierce take a lower leg hit right when you don't need it, when you know it's over with. Just take a knee or maybe, throw a Hail Mary, yeah. But that's it.
If he would have torn his ACL right now, we would all be saying that Lovie Smith should be fired. Like, what is he doing running the ball in that spot? 713-780-ESPN, Straight Trash, Homie, presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals. What did we miss? 713-780-3776. I'm sure you've been aware of this with the Houston Astros. It looks like Jim Crane is entertaining the idea of moving on from James Click, and why moving on from James Click is an all-or-nothing proposition for the Houston Astros. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the people that just sponsored Straight Trash, homie. That is Vavia. And we know that right now there's a lot of cleaning that's going on, from driveways to the fact that maybe your office complex and you own a business or you're a project manager and you need someone to help you get rid of all the garbage and the excess every day while you continue to do what you need to do to keep the cleanup working and progress being made on the projects that you're working on. That's where Vavia comes in, because they have 10-yard and 15-yard roll-off dumpsters. They can bring it to you and take it away the same day. They are on time. They are going to be there when you need them to be, and they're going to get rid of it the same day so that you don't have to worry about HOAs with your house or people complaining about all the excess and the trash that's laying around. They make sure that you can just take care of what you do best while they do what they do best, and that is clean up with dumpsters. They are fantastic, and project managers feel the same way people that use Vavia in their driveway have felt for a long period of time. There's no more ugly dumpsters to ruin your curb appeal. The HOA won't be knocking on your door. The dumpsters are clean. The takeaway is great, and they are very, very, very reliable. They take care of everything, so you don't have to. You just worry about what the project is at hand. You've seen them being used all across town. We used them for our ESPN golf tournament. Texas Custom Patios uses them for all their projects. Why don't you be the next to use them too? Tell them you heard about it right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All you got to do to get in touch with them is govavia.com. That's govavia.com. Or call them 832-699-1555. Go Vavia.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into the Astros potentially moving on from their general manager, regardless of what they do in the playoffs. Kind of surprising, to say the least, but maybe not. But Brendan's participating in the chat room, twitch.tv/ESPN975. So you know it's a special day if Brendan's doing that. Brendan, what are you guys talking to? I'm seeing some of the things going on here that I'm not sure I want to know about.
I didn't know that other people cared about this, but people are talking about cheating in the chess world in our Twitch chat.
Yeah.
I thought I was the only loser who cared.
I saw how they were doing that and was a bit surprised.
Well, that's a theory. That's not like a... There's no
it's a theory?
Right? Yeah.
I took it as fact.
No, it's not
I
even
thought it was
fact
a matter of fact.
It's not even fact that there's cheating. That's a accusation.
Yeah. You want to tell Blankers over here what the accusation was of how they were cheating playing chess?
Anal beads.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah, you heard me.
Anal beads somehow tie into chess cheating?
Yep.
I mean, we don't have the whole show to get into.
I mean, how much can you really say? How much can you really say about that?
Yeah, there's not much.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just you're debating whether or not you think you cheated. I do.
Certain vibrations to know certain things on the chessboard. Yeah, I mean,
I think it's impressive.
Stuff.
The truth
terrible
is, stuff. If you cheated,
got someone
it's
with the other with the button, that's
I guess. I don't know how they could cheat, though. Like, are they looking at somebody else's, like, potential moves?
Do you sing Moon right. River when you get the signal?
But they're telling them, like, where to move their certain pieces. But, like, there's still an element of strategy to what your opponent's going to do.
You just have somebody on the other end who has a chess engine.
Sounds like they got something on
right,
the other
right, so
end.
They're giving you the optimal move.
Right.
They're giving you the optimal move. That's
I think it's impressive.
Doing.
If you can manage to cheat in person at chess, credit to you.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. The ways that people come up with to cheat. There's been major cheating scandals that have rocked the world of chess. There's been major cheating scandals that have rocked the world of poker and bass fishing over the last 2 weeks.
Bass fishing.
Yeah, they're stuffing leads into the fish so it weighs heavier whenever they weigh them in. Some dude was like cutting up the fish to show the guilty party.
How do they... So it's not in, like, the belly of the fish? It's, like, literally embedded into the...
They were stuffing it down its gullet whenever they caught it.
Oh, my God.
So, like, whoever caught them was, like, cutting the fish open and pulling the weights out. Be like, you cheater. And apparently the dudes that were cheating are, like top-notch fishermen that have won, like, six figures in tournaments.
Like Babe Winkleman?
Sure. I don't know who that is.
Babe Winkleman, when, on Saturday mornings when we were kids, you used to wake up and you wanted to watch football or sports, but before they came on, Babe Winkleman's Fishing Hour came on because he was the ultimate angler.
Yeah, and then there was a woman who beat some dude named Garrett, who's considered like the best cash game player in the world, for like a $200,000 cash game pot.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm not going to go through like the hand history.
Again?
No, I mean, they don't know how. They think that she might have been cheating because she called him with like Jack High, which is like, what are you doing there?
Okay.
There's some thought that she misread her hand. There's some thought that maybe she had a vibrating ring on her finger, not some other places where the sun doesn't shine. So who knows? Who knows what's really going on in all of this?
Well, you know what? More to just say the Astros are just joining the crowd of everybody else that did it from 17 on.
Yeah.
The whole world's are the full of cheaters now. Just cheaters left and right. Just accept it,
cheating.
People. There's going to be cheating.
Speaking of the Astros, and maybe speaking to the 2017 Houston Astros, hear me out on this.
Okay.
We've heard this this story with Jim Crane potentially moving on from James Click, which whenever I heard that put the fear of you-know-what into me. Mm-hmm. I don't like that idea at all. And we've heard some people that maybe he's meddling a little bit in James Click's ability to be a general manager. He's not living up to Jeff Luhnow, who was, you know, making the splash moves left and right. You win a World Series, you still trade for Gerrit Cole. A couple years later, you're trading for Zach Greinke. I mean, we know what Luhnow brought to the Astros. I think James Click has been fine, but hasn't really done anything. Now, not doing anything with this roster is probably the play. Like, I'm not sure I'm going to do anything that's going to mess up this roster. Where do you stand on the whole Astros potentially moving on from James Click and or Dusty Baker when the season's over, regardless of the finish?
Well, here's the thing. I think that first and foremost, we've heard and I've heard from people that have dealt with Jim Crane in the business world, he's a very difficult man to get along with. And normally guys that are, you know, that have a ton of money, that are, you know, at the top of, you know, companies or organizations, that have a lot of power to go with it, can be a little bit tough to deal with. And it takes a certain personality to be able to mix and jive with that kind of ownership or leadership. And what it seems to me is it's like oil and water in terms of Click seems to be very laid back, very kind of, you know, under the radar, kind of, you know, stays out of the limelight as much as possible unless he has to talk. Obviously, doesn't even say much when he does have to talk. And Crane is one of those boisterous guys that basically is going to point the finger, pound the fist, tell you how it's going to be and how he wants it to be. And in the case of like a Justin Verlander, not caring what anybody else thinks or does. If it's my team and that's my guy and he's my friend, I'm going to get him and we're getting it done and that's it. And I could see that relationship and how it could possibly deteriorate, because I think the other thing that factors into this is when you hired a guy like Click from a Rays organization that was completely analytically driven, we said a lot, and we knew that that was going to be playing into it. But one of the things you also think when you're hired as a general manager of any sports team is that you are going to be the guy that makes the decisions and hires the guys to work for you, including the manager of your baseball team. Well, the owner already hired him and hired him first before he hired the general manager. And you got to believe throughout the entire process that was gnawing at Click, because every GM wants to hire their own guy that knows how you want it done. So from my standpoint, I could see it deteriorating. I'm with you. I think he's done some nice things at the last two trade deadlines to get some players that are obviously going to help this team. Last year, they saved the bullpen. This year, you've got two guys when you didn't even realize at the time, or maybe he did, you were going to lose Brantley. But you got some guys that were either glorified backups that were really good or guys that could start from you and be very good. So I like the minimal moves that he's made and the trade deadline moves he's made. But overall, you're right. It's lacking who we both think is the best general manager and maybe in the history of Houston, and Jeff Luhnow, in being able to make splashy, impactful moves that really push the needle.
If I'm evaluating James Click, I give him a passing grade for the time that he's been here. And that's why the whole Ken Rosenthal dropping that bomb in the Athletic a month ago put fear into me. It's like, okay, is Jim Crane turning into Jerry Jones, which is something that's pretty frightening, because there's some comments in Ken Rosenthal's latest little piece on the Astros and the Athletic. This came out last week. Crane is a difficult, demanding, and heavily involved in baseball operations, acting almost as an owner GM. He said he had no knowledge of the Astros' illegal sign stealing in 17 and 18, and some in the organization believe he took a more active role because he did not want to be blindsided again. So, like, it's I don't like hearing that about an owner. I don't like hearing the level of meddling with an owner and a general manager to where now all of a sudden, you know, you're acting as owner GM, because that's Jerry Jones. Now, one of the counter arguments that you point to all the time is Cal McNair. Cal McNair does not meddle. He's the opposite of Jerry Jones. If you're looking at the meddling spectrum, Cal McNair is over here all the way to the left, Jerry Jones all the way to the right. You always say that there needs to be a healthy amount of meddling, that he shouldn't have allowed the DeAndre Hopkins trade.
Right.
Allow your GM the power, but step in when you absolutely have to.
Right. No question about it. There has to be like a happy medium, right? You don't want to be oblivious or so hands-off that you don't get involved in what could be a negative franchise-altering move or moves, but you also don't want to be so heavily involved that you can't let your general manager do his job because you're constantly suggesting and getting involved in any process with any discussion of signing someone or trading for someone or doing things like that. I think when you look at it from Click's perspective, we're looking at it from the organization, obviously, first and foremost, and from Crane's perspective. From Click's perspective, you don't want to be a guy that if he re-ups or gets re-upped, that after a six-year span or however long the next, you know, he stays in Houston, that everybody goes, well, you were really just a puppet for the owner. You really didn't do anything on your own to show what you could really do, as opposed to, I think there's still plenty of teams out there that see what he was able to do, maybe also because he had to deal with a very volatile owner, and he was still able to do things to keep this team winning and on a path to have a chance to win a World Series and go, I'll hire this guy, and he can get out from under the dictatorship of Crane, get a situation where not only can he hire his own manager, but he can be his own type general manager without being watched every day over his shoulder by a meddling owner.
Crane does not trust Click the way he trusted Luno, Rosenthal says, with whom he worked for 8 seasons, enduring a painful rebuild and then enjoying great success. Crane is also more inclined to act quickly and boldly than Click, who came from the Rays. The Astros seem to be approaching a breaking point. An early departure in the postseason might serve as the reason for Crane to move on from not only James Click, but also potentially Dusty Baker. Why I think it makes sense to go ahead and do this now. I think it would show bravado from an owner. I love bravado from an owner. I think that the Astros could win the World Series this year, and you still have a new GM and a new manager next year. Would you be on board with that? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at MyBookie. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. If there's bets that you want to lay down, if there's a game that you really want to make more interesting, the only place to go after it and do something like that is MyBookie.ag. And the reason why I tell you that all the time is the fact that MyBookie.ag takes care of their customers every step of the way. From making it really easy to pay and put money into your account in a variety of different ways, from Bitcoin to your credit card to a check, they will pay you when you win, and more so than anything else, they take care of you with different promotions like the one they got going on right now. Double your next deposit up to $1,000. All you got to do when you log in or sign up at MyBookie.ag when they ask for a promo code is put in BET975. And up to $1,000, if you say put in $250, there's going to be $500 in your account almost instantly. And that means more money in your account, more games you can bet on, more chances to win. And that's why you love MyBookie.ag even more. They even got this thing called Prop Builder, where maybe you're not into over-unders and point spreads, but you feel like you could really capitalize and make some money if it was just about a team stat or a player stat, something that you could really focus on that you think you have a knack for calling the right way. Well, you can do that with the Prop Builder. You can pick a team, pick a stat, and go after it with a bet. And if you win, you're going to get paid. That's the way they do things at MyBookie. So go on to MyBookie right now at MyBookie.ag. Put in the promo code BET975. Double your next deposit and do what I always tell you to do. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere. With the only place I tell you to do it, it's MyBookie.ag.